Hi, I'm Michelle Fifa from Copra Fame and Shag Matthews Assistant, and you're listening to Shortbox Showcase.
Hi, I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Em, and you're listening to the Shortbox Showcase, Episode 62, Podcasting of Relative Geeks in Time and Space, also known as Porgits. This episode continues our...
Whoa, seriously. Porgits? You're going to name an event, an episode, you're going to call it Porgits?
This is my retaliation for, what, 4 episodes now of February?
Made you say it! Yes!
And it's March, so you know.
In this one, we are continuing our unnamed network-wide crossover.
Well, it is March now, so you can't keep using it.
The event is bigger than the inside of the calendar month. There's something in there. There's a joke in there somehow. We are continuing that event by talking about our recent trip to the Doctor Who convention, Gallifrey 1.
And, content warning, if you will, there's going to be lots of talk about a certain irredeemable shag.
Yeah.
So sorry in advance, I guess.
But first, some of our Whovian feedback, because we've gathered a bunch of responses from a bunch of these Whovish episodes from around the network. And we started with the rebroadcast of our Who True Freaks episode with the late Sean Engel, and Hugo Rivera wrote in about that one.
He says, "Dear Professor and M, just giving you a little love from what I like to call the silent majority, those who listen religiously but seldom send feedback. Love all you guys do. I was pleasantly surprised to hear Sean's voice again. Sometimes my job of delivering mail can be lonely, so listening to podcasts helps keep my mind engaged and helps to learn new things. And I owe Mr. Engel a lot. You see, I used to listen to a lot of sports and entertainment podcasts, but those can sometimes get pretty boring at times. So I looked around at some emerging comic book podcasts. Then I learned of a podcast about my favorite Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner, called Just One of the Guys. Surprisingly, Sean made me also like Guy, of whom I was not a big fan, mostly because I'm a Batman fan, and after all, One Punch, wahaha, you get the idea. But because of Sean, I found Relatively Geeky. And because of you guys, I found the amazing Stella. And because of Batgirl to Oracle being in the BTU family, I found Robin, Everyone Loves the Drake. I, of course, listened to everything that Sean did after that, including Parallel Lines, About the Tangent Universe, his DS9 podcast, which I still listen to this day, and where I, unfortunately, heard news about his passing. I should have written him more back then, and it's why I try to write more people now. Thank you, and keep up the good work. Sorry about the long email, but I don't write often, so when I do, they have to be long. Take care, guys. Sincerely, Hugo Rivera. P.S. I forgot this was a Doctor Who episode. My first Doctor was the 9th from back in 2005, but my favorite by far is Matt Smith. Didn't see any of the past Doctors back then, but I'm slowly working my way through some classic episodes."
Good. And we heard from reigning Listener of the Year Nathaniel Wayne, who admitted he had not listened to that episode because he hadn't gotten to Battlefield yet in his classic Who watch through. But I may have to bump that up a bit so I can safely listen to your episode. I did get to listen to the origins of your fandoms, at least, which means I get to do the thing I'm really always working towards. Talking about me!
Aren't we all?
While my hook in the Doctor Who might not be as unique as the Professor's, or as traumatic as M's...
But it didn't leave a lasting impact or anything.
You barely remember it. I think it makes for a decent story all the same. I actually have heard the story of Nathaniel's. Doctor Who was something I've had an awareness of, and I think even saw a bit of a Fifth Doctor episode once while over at a friend's house. They were total PBS family.
As were we.
But the cheesy effects put me off, and I couldn't wrap my head around what was going on for a long time, and it was just something I knew by name and little else. In 2007, I was on my honeymoon in London with my daughter's mother. We were there for a week, which is really the perfect amount of time for a city like that. Because it was enough time to not only to get to see all the stuff you're supposed to see, like the Tower and the Globe Theater, London Eye, Buckingham Palace, but also do some stuff more unique to you. We went to two plays, including seeing Daniel Radcliffe at Equus.
Mm.
Plus, we even had a little bit of downtime. So many trips are ruined by overly tight schedules of trying to cram everything in.
We'll get to that tip.
So it was during an afternoon where we were basically just relaxing and that she went and took a bath and I started to flip through the channels. And I came across an ood and pretty much stopped dead. The design of the ood immediately reminded me of the Mind Flayers.
Oh my gosh, they are!
From Forgotten Realms, from D&D. There was no way I wasn't going to linger for a bit. The episode I ended up on was the Satan Pit, and despite being the second half of a two-parter, I was completely drawn in. The point at which the Doctor is dangling in the pit, looking down into the darkness below and says, "It could be miles to go yet, or it could be 30 feet. I could survive 30 feet," and then unhooks himself and drops, was the moment that I thought, okay, as soon as we're back in the States, I need to look into this. We got back home. I was able to get the first three seasons through Netflix DVD, which made me caught up by the time Series 4 started airing, and I've never looked back. I'm still working on catching up on all the available classic material, and in the last year I've added Big Finish to my diet, which finally gave me an appreciation of Colin Baker's Doctor, because, yes, the actual TV shows really don't.
It's rough. It's rough, guys.
There's just so much out there, and enough of it is wonderful, that I don't see myself ever completely abandoning the franchise. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne. P.S. I don't have a definitive My Doctor. And my favorite tends to shift. It was Smith for a time, and then Tom Baker. Capaldi comes so close, but I don't love him in his first series. And it'll probably keep shifting as time goes on. Weird. There's a Doctor known for being a bit on the grumpy side. And Nathaniel likes him.
How weird.
Who could have guessed?
Well, we always love hearing from our professional buzzkill.
I love that story of finding the Doc in England when we visited in 2017. I was able to watch a new episode on the BBC live in London. That was fun.
That was fun. It was, and for you, it was perfect because it was right after the Arsenal match and right before my mom and I abandoned you to go get fish and chips.
It was a win-win-win.
On Shortbox 61, we covered some of our fave fives as far as it came to the Doctor, and some of our listeners shared their own fave fives. Clinton Robison of Coffee and Comics threw us some of his thoughts. Alan Ed M, or M and Alan, whatever.
Yeah.
Another wonderful episode as always, and a nice way to wrap up February.
See? It caught on!
Well, and it's also not over, so, like, strap in. I figured I'd write in with some top five lists of my own. Granted, much like the two of you, my lists will be in no particular order. Top five non-Tom Baker doctors. I appreciate the concession. Peter Davison, Paul McGann, Sylvester McCoy, Peter Capaldi, and Christopher Eccleston.
Mm-hmm.
So, from this, we can tell that Clinton is definitely a Big Finish fan.
Fair. That
because
is fair.
Sylvester, Paul, and even Peter Davison, their film series can be a little rough at times. Honorable mentions being Richard E. Grant, Scream of the Shulka, and Rowan Atkinson, Curse of Fatal Death.
Top five non-Sarah Jane companions.
Another important concession.
This is good. Ace, Donna Noble, Tegan, Captain Jack, Romana 2. Yes!
It's a generational thing.
Honorable mentions were Leela, Perry, Martha, and Adric.
Okay.
Yes, Adric, the Wesley Crusher of Doctor Who. Fight me. See, I think we agree he's the Wesley Crusher of Doctor Who. That's the problem!
I think we're all in agreement about that, actually. Top five non-companions are K-9, Brigadier Alistair Lethbridge Stewart, of course, Madame Vastra, Jenny Flint, and Strax.
Yes, one group.
As a group. Sally Sparrow and Alonso. He's
Alonzi? Alonzo? That's the only reason he's
on
there.
That's the only reason he's on there, but it's good. It's very good.
Clinton's top five episodes. The Five Doctors.
Excellent.
Day of the Doctor.
Yep.
Blink.
Yep.
Stolen Earth, Journey's End.
I really need to rewatch that.
The Talons of Wang Chiang.
Soon.
Honorable mentions, The Time Crash minisode, Night of the Doctor minisode, yes. Terror of the Zygons, and Earthshock.
The top five non-Master, Dalek, or Cyberman aliens and foes. The Zygons, mm-hmm. The Ronnie. Oh, I always forget about the Ronnie,
yeah.
And then I always feel bad about forgetting about the Ronnie. Morbius, the residents of Paradise Towers. Okay, we are going to
You mean the cannibals?
We're going to have words. And just robots in general. Just all the Doctor Who robots.
Top five non-sonic screwdriver accessories.
Ah!
Jelly babies.
Of course.
Peter Davison's celery.
Excellent.
Sly's umbrella.
I actually really want that umbrella.
David Tennant's brainy specs. And Patrick Troughton's flute. Honorable mention, Tom Baker's yo-yo, Colin Baker's various lapel pins, and Jodie Whittaker's suspenders. We will talk about Jodie Whittaker's outfit later in the episode.
Clinton thinks that's enough for now, so pretty sure there will be more lists coming your way, and can't wait for the next episode. Take care, Clinton.
Well, here's another list that came our way from Nathaniel Wayne. He had things to say because he always loves
Doctor Who lists.
He has things to say about them. Anybody who watches Council of Geeks knows I love me some Doctor Who lists. So obviously, I'm going to jump in on this. Five favorite Doctors, chronological order, Troughton, Tom Baker, Sly McCoy, Matt Smith, and Capaldi.
Companions, also in chronological order, Jamie McCrimmon, yes, Sarah Jane Smith, not my number one, because he does have to keep his buzzkill reputation.
Got it.
Ace, Domna Noble, and Bill Potts.
Not a lot to argue with in that list, actually, I'm going to be honest. Classic stories, chronological, Tomb of the Cybermen,
soon,
Time Warrior, City of Death, The Pirate Planet, and Remembrance of the Daleks.
You know, Pirate Planet is also a story that I always forget about.
Mm.
I hear it's really good,
yeah,
but I can
yeah.
just, it's just not on anyone's top 10 list, usually, so it never ends up in my Netflix queue. Favorite modern stories? The Empty Child / The Doctor Dances.
Mm-hmm.
Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead.
Do you think he just picked those so he could get more than five in his top five? That would be a Nathaniel thing to do.
But they're also really good.
Okay, yes, but still.
Followed by Vincent and the Doctor.
Yes.
Heaven Sent, and World Enough and Time.
Mm. Recurring villains, Daleks, Cybermen, Omega.
Ah, yes.
The Master, and The Silence. Fight me. I like the silence. Yeah, I think I like them in theory more than execution, but the execution wasn't bad.
I think, once again, The Silence is an example of, like, the angels.
The more they showed up,
the less powerful
possibly.
They were. But, like, as a standalone, single villain, of course, Moffat is big into his conceptual horror.
Yes, right.
So things like being unwritten from mm-hmm. time and being displaced and then seeing things that you forget that are there. Mm-hmm. That's like his whole entire thing.
So The Silence along with the angels pretty much represent the pinnacle of what he thinks of a Doctor Who villain.
Favorite one-off villains? Count Scarlione, The Empty Child, The Beast, The Vashta Narada.
Which you mentioned.
And The Flood.
Mm-hmm. Big Finish, The War Master, Series 1, The Holy Terror, Jubilee, and then two that everyone mentioned.
Spare Parts.
When they mentioned Big Finish and The Chimes of Midnight.
So, there you go.
Oh, I wish I could have been in the room to politely argue with you both. Huh.
Oh, weird.
Shocking. Really? Oh, it's no. Huh. On oh so many things, but I won't go through them for once because it's not a hate cast.
And Doctor Who is the best show on television, except for when it's not. Yeah, like if I could just have that like tattooed on me. Doctor Who is the best show on television, except when it's not.
Is that
dang?
Is that too long to fit on a ribbon? We might need to consider that for next time. Anyway, I'm spoiling ahead a few minutes. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne. P.S. I share M's pain every time they have to hear the professor say the name of this little series. Oh, Nathaniel.
Vindication!
On Quarterbin 131, Shag and I talked about an issue from the mid-80s reprint series of the UK Doctor Who magazine, and Luke Jaconetti commented on the cover, which had Tom Baker delivering a consequence to another Tom Baker. And Luke said, just what I expect from a Doctor Who comic. Hardcore fisticuffs.
There you go. Nathaniel commented on this one as well, saying, Dear Professor, I'm so sorry that you had to endure Shag for nearly an hour in order to produce this latest Quarterbin. This is nothing. This is nothing.
Try spending a long weekend with him. Ugh, oof.
Now, having not read this group of stories and having only just started to dabble in Who comics, largely thanks to care packages from some guy in Ohio,
Hashtag comic book circle of life,
I'm not sure how much I can add to that end of the discussion. However, I can revel in Shag's pervasive wrongness.
Oh, yes, we all can.
He likes Love and Monsters? And even defends it? Oh, for the love of Pete. Over on the Council of Geeks YouTube channel, subscribe now while supplies last. I've been revisiting New Who one episode at a time and recently got to this one. Now, to be fair, I do believe there's merit in the core idea of its look at fandom, particularly in light of some of the toxic turns that Doctor Who fandom has taken in recent years. A group of people coming together out of mutual interest in the activities of the Doctors, and they build friendships and connections out of all that. And then a swaggering loudmouth shows up and tells them they're wrong and inserts himself and absorbs all of the joy until they're just part of him. Yeah, the Absorbaloff is a toxic fan. The problem, or rather the primary underlying problem, upon which this rickety shack made of unused popsicle sticks is built, is that the story isn't interesting or even functional once you remove the allegory. If allegory works at all, it's when it's being funneled through a story that's still worth telling, even without the metaphor.
That's fair.
And you wouldn't tell this story in this way for any reason other than the fandom allegory. I'll also dispute your assertion that it's good until the monster reveal because
Shag. This is not about disagreeing with me.
It spends a painful amount of time picking on the character of Jackie and over character aspects we've known about her since the very first episode. The video diary conceit doesn't flow well. It opens with a literal Scooby-Doo chase gag. As to the Absorbaloff itself, I'm really sick of the it was designed by a kid excuse. Firstly, if you need to excuse an element of your design, that means there's a problem.
Fair.
Second, yes, a kid designed it, but an adult professional wrote the script, and adult professionals realized the concept of the suit, and adult professionals lit it in broad daylight to show how wonky it was in full 4K glory, and an adult actor portrayed it. So what was their justification for how bad this is? Side note, the kid who designed that monster now has a YouTube channel, which isn't half bad. It's called Channel Pup, if anyone is interested, after they've subscribed to Council of Geeks. Okay, I think I've done my job here. Shag finds his joy, as does my dad, and I tear it to shreds. Another day's work done. Great episode, and geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne.
Any chance for anyone to correct Shag? We're all for that.
Here's the thing about that episode. I don't actually believe that you like that episode. I think you just really love the 4 minutes or so that they're playing ELO.
Okay, that doesn't hurt. I do agree with the kid design, the excuse. That doesn't excuse what the adults did with the concept. I am more kindly disposed to the first 25 minutes of the episode. The ELO part doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. I do like the story goofiness, the fandom commentary, the sense of community. But again, taken as a whole, I agree that it's not good, because the end really wrecks it for me.
I've watched it, I think, once in its entirety, but the first time I watched it, I literally only watched the last 15 minutes, because that's when I had showed up. And right. Let me just say, I can't. I just can't. Just knowing that that's the end, moments that are sort of cute or interesting. I think that's the worst thing about that episode, and I think it's sort of indicative of the worst kind of Doctor Who episode, is an episode that is mediocre on average and has like 2 or 3 really good ideas that are just completely ruined.
Yeah.
That's just, it's just sad.
Now, we've talked a number of times on Shortbox in general about endings, and this
They're
really
hard,
is a case.
But like, dang.
But this is definitely Exhibit A of a bad ending ruining an entire episode.
And finally, we heard again from Carla, who was very excited for our shout-out on last episode. The content of her email was not Doctor Who related, mostly Constantine Why don't you send me the emails? So we will talk to it at a later date, but we did want to, once again, give her a shout-out.
All right, time to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about our experiences at the Doctor Who convention, Gallifrey 1.
Drawn and Paneled is a brand new comic book focused podcast from Gen X Grown Up. Hey, I'm George.
And I'm Jason. Every Wednesday, we bring you news, reviews, interviews, insight, and commentary on the comic books we love.
And we cover everything from the Golden Age to the Modern Age. If you're a comic book fan who enjoys going beyond the page to learn about the history and creators who bring the characters to life, we're for you.
You can find Drawn and Paneled wherever you listen to podcasts or on our website at genxgrownup.com.
Talk to you guys soon.
And we're back.
And last spring, with Heroes Con already booked for 2018, did we mention we went to Heroes Con?
Oh, we met Paul there.
That's right. Paul Hicks was there too. He never mentions that.
Fun time.
But we were talking about vacation plans for 2019 and 2020, including what cons we might want to attend. And we knew that some of our buddies did the occasional Doctor Who con, and we had targeted Gallifrey 1 as a possibility. We mentioned that to the kind and wonderful Sutherlands, Countess Ruth
and Count Darren.
And then one afternoon last April, they said that the Galley 2019 tickets were going on sale in a week, and they usually sell out over that weekend, so
we talked about it, we thought about it, and then we hit that purchase button.
So I was traveling from an academic conference that weekend when tickets were on sale, but thanks to the strong Wi-Fi, shout out to the St. Louis airport, I was able to snag our tickets.
And as the hackers say, we were in.
We ended up staying at a different hotel from the con, about a block away, which it turned out was also where both the Sutherlands and Shag were staying.
And I'm not saying this is the reason that he picked that particular hotel, but you could see the Carl's Jr. from his window. So that may have been a minor factor.
Just saying. Now, due to our work schedules, we were only able to attend two of the 3 days of the con. We had to hit the airways early on Sunday morning, so we missed some of the events, but what we attended, spoilers,
was pretty awesome.
So instead of going day by day, we thought we'd organize this sort of by topic or by type of event. And we've sort of already mentioned it. The hanging out part
was actually, that was about 40% of my plan for the convention. And I told Shag, like, well, you know, if I go see some stuff and some panels and meet some people, like, that'd be cool. But mostly, I'm just here to hang out.
That is true.
He was like, you flew all the way across the country to watch Classic Who in a dark room with a bunch of strangers? And I was like, yeah, that's absolutely why I came to Los Angeles. And so, like, that was really my major priority. Everything else, the signings and panels and the con staples, that was all secondary to me. I was going for the experience.
So we spent a lot of time with Shag and the Sutherlands, like we said. David Ace Gutierrez was unable to attend the con, but he did meet us for the pre-con.
Lobby con, bar con.
So that was good because pretty nice fella.
And also an odd bird, which I think now, after like 3 hours of our collective company, he finally believes that it is in fact a compliment, not an insult. So really, really, really nice dude.
I mean, I was pitching for a couple hours the relaunch of the Ultraverse Network. And we sort of had the reunion right there, but so who knows what'll come from that. But
and it was a really fun time. So that was by the end of day zero. We were pretty much set.
We were done pretty well. We had fun.
We had sat down in an auditorium with Colin Baker in the same space.
Right.
We had gone to the Artist Alley. We had visited a couple of panel rooms. We got drinks with David Ace, and we had dinner with Shag and the Sutherlands. So, honestly, we were pretty good.
Now, you mentioned the Carl's Jr. across the street.
That was the breakfast hangout.
Yes.
Mornings
with Shag and the Sutherlands as well. And it was nice to have that opportunity to sort of before the con started, because most of us were on East Coast time and
yep.
the con was on West Coast time. So we had a couple of hours to kill in the morning just to hang out and just to sort of very broadly talk about what we thought we would be doing that day, correlate schedules to some extent. But sort of the Sutherlands approach was also similar to ours and somewhat similar to Shag's. It was, there's some couple handful of things we want to do each day. Other than that, I'll go to what you're going to, or you go to what they're going to, or we'll meet up for lunch here, or we'll do. So that hanging out part was very fun. We saw Mark Baker Wright.
Yes.
Who was dressed as, was it the fourth?
It was
and
first,
the fourth and then the seventh.
Yes. And not sure what he did on Sunday, but
that's
he was an excellent, though very tall, seventh doctor.
Good job there. We met Brian Ng and his cousin Courtney.
Yes.
They were fun.
Very nice. Very cool people.
I think those are folks that Shag knows, locals, and fun hanging out and just seeing, you know, about. So we had about a crew of about 10 that you sort of wander around and see at the various places.
I met a couple of people. I went to one of the hangouts, which was for LGBTQ, etc. people. Met a couple of people there, traded ribbons, and then I kept bumping into them over the course of the convention. So I was like, okay, I've got a couple con buddies. I've got the buddies that I came to the con to hang out with. And then I was lucky enough that one of my friends had moved to LA three months earlier, and I'd completely forgotten about it. And so when I landed in LA, I posted on Facebook like, hey, I'm in LA. And he's like, you jerk. Why didn't you tell me you were in LA? The night before our flight, he came and shanghaied me from the hotel and drove me around L.A., got some really good ramen.
So you missed that time that I... Oh, well, I'll get to that in a little while.
Let me just say, we both had awesome dinners that night.
With good company.
With good company.
Lunch and dinner, we did from the food trucks on site.
I was surprised, because considering that it was both con price and L.A. price...
Oh, man, oh, man.
I mean, a meal was still less than $15,
yeah.
Which I did not think was going to be doable.
Right.
I was planning $20 a meal.
Especially when one of them's dinner.
Yeah.
That was quite reasonable if you sort of balance out the East Coast prices versus the LA prices, though the lunch and the dinner together worked very well, yes. Really reasonable for the amount and the quality of food we got. And they had different food trucks each day.
Yes,
three.
Yes, which was greatly appreciated.
Three each day, but they rotated, so you had a lot of options. And the thing was, there were plenty of restaurants around there, but at any time we could all be 20 minutes away from the next thing we wanted to do.
Exactly.
So hanging out there on site for meals made it much easier to.
And provided that you were going to those, it meant that you were absolutely guaranteed that you were going to run into somebody else
from
your group.
That is true.
In line, waiting for a food truck on their way from one thing to another thing.
But once you got your food, you were 3 minutes from the room you had to get to at whatever time. So that came in quite handy. You mentioned the ribbons, the other social aspects of being there. And it was just a very friendly con, I found.
Yeah, full of really, really nice, cool people. And that's largely true of the Who fandom in general.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who go to Galley are, like, just the nicest.
I hypothesize that there is something about Doctor Who that actually contributes to that. And that is the lead character and the secondary characters change all of the time.
Always.
As we saw in the email section, right? Debates about your favorite companion and favorite episodes and favorite this and favorite that. It's just baked into it because there are so many options.
And there's no definitive.
Yes. There's no, like, you fan orthodoxy.
And the thing I really liked, because, of course, I always want to check out the cosplay, is, again, because of the sort of freewheeling nature of the main character and the cast and the sort of vibe of the show, that the transformative cosplay was, like, peak. I don't know. There was a very specific thing that I noticed, that there were a lot of I'm not even totally sure how to, maybe sort of like Victorian style
right.
re-inspirations of the fifth Doctor specifically in like a sort of Mary Poppins-esque like dress form. So I probably saw 7 or 8 ladies wandering around in a reinterpreted version of the fifth Doctor's very posh coat, but as this very posh, refined dress with a little celery and like a big frilly hat. That was awesome. I already mentioned the meetups. The meetups were great because, of course, everyone had ribbons all the time. And if you're just in the food line or waiting for the bathroom or whatever, someone might just be like, hey, do you want a ribbon?
The ribbons, adhesive ribbons that get, you know, attached to your name badge and then to each other. And so you can have a long line of ribbons and everyone sort of brings their own, creates their own. And that is just part of the Galley One, you know, ethos or tradition. We asked the Sutherlands, I think it was, about it, and said it happens a little bit at a couple of the other Doctor Who cons, but mostly that is a Galley-specific tradition. And it's a fun one because some of us sometimes aren't the most outgoing people, and it gives you an excuse to make eye contact and have an interaction with someone on a very friendly basis, whether you're, you said, standing in line at the food truck or next to each other in a panel room, or they had a couple of specific ribbon exchange meetups and times where you could just go and make those exchanges.
And some of them were really cool because they were like character specific. So some people brought huge boxes full of ribbons and they'd have one for Doctors 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up. And then whenever they saw a cosplayer, they would give them that specific ribbon.
Right.
I wore my fantastic 13 coat that I was able to get for $21. Still so proud of that.
Here's the tree. Boom, there's the apple.
Yes. So I was able to get that on the cheapskies. And I was like, well, I'll just wear that in a t-shirt and it'll be fine. And people were coming up to me all the time like, here, do you want this 13-base ribbon? Do you want this 13-base ribbon? And those were some of the moments where I had to admit, you know, I haven't actually seen the newest series yet. I just really like her coat. Yeah, I was able to rectify that.
Yes.
At one of the panel events. But it was just really fun. It's nice because you do have that sort of social gathering built in. It helps with that sort of initial awkwardness. A thing I really appreciated at check-in was you could put whatever you wanted on your badge. Right. So Shag was wandering around as the irredeemable Shag. There were a couple other people who had their Twitter handle or their blog or something.
I was almost Professor Allen. Couldn't pull that trigger.
And you can just put whatever you want on there. And I appreciated that they also had pronoun ribbons.
Right.
So when you checked in, your first ribbon, if you were so inclined, you could get a pronoun ribbon and just stick that right under your name. And avoid some, like, potential awkwardness with people being like, well, but are you in cosplay or are you gender nonconforming?
Right,
or, like,
right.
sort of what? Again, just really, like, social, helpful, pleasant convention where people had really thought about how do we make this the most pleasant, welcoming, enjoyable place to hang out with other very socially awkward fans.
The ribbons that we brought with us to exchange, mine was, of course, whatever you say, Professor.
Very important. Mine, I thought, was pretty cute because it was my first Doctor Who convention. So mine was, if I asked really, really nicely, would you be my new best friends? And a lot of people got a good kick out of that. There were some other really great ones. You ain't Banksy, or am I?
Visit Venice, my sons are thirsty.
Some classics. Bow ties are cool, don't blink, etc., etc.
There were a number of, half an hour ago, it was a white-haired Scotsman.
Reverse the polarity of the neutron flow, of course.
A number of Jodie-related, it's about time, or similar slogans.
The greatest, most genius ribbon ever, of all time, a psychic ribbon. Blank white ribbon.
Genius.
Genius.
That was funny.
That was so funny. Because there were some sort of gag ribbons, but that took the cake.
Hold it up. Psychic ribbon. And like you said, sometimes we were out just in the lobby. I remember recharging the phones, figuring out where we were going to be. And a couple of kids came up to us, you know, 7 years old or something. Do you want to change a ribbon?
Hello, do you want a ribbon? I have a ribbon. Do you want one? It was so adorable.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do, tiny children. It was really fun. Had a really good vibe.
Mm-hmm. I would say that, yes. Now, the reason we were there, theoretically, was on Who-related business.
In theory.
So, talk a little bit about the Who-related panels and the Who-related rooms that we saw.
So a thing I really like at our local anime convention is that they have viewing rooms set up where sort of during the downtime when there maybe isn't quite as much big mainline programming, they'll just set up the side rooms and play a movie or six episodes of an anime or whatever. And they also have that at Gallifrey One. So, of course, the Daleks was showing. The original OG first Doctor Dalek story.
Second story ever.
So we went and watched some of that. I think you were finally able to fix your earlier concession that you had seen more reinterpreted, more people playing William Hartnell than actual William Hartnell episodes.
I think now I've finally gotten it.
So you watched the first two or three episodes. Mm-hmm. I stuck around until about five.
I came back. I snuck in and I saw about the last 10 minutes. But that was just the denouement, really, is what I saw. I have to say you are right about one thing.
Which is?
Barbara.
Barbara's great.
And Ian.
The worst.
Not so great. Great character. Terrible companion.
Yeah. God. Just the pits. Okay, look. We called Adric the Wesley of Doctor Who.
Yikes.
He might have to fight Ian for that at some times. Because
with any luck, it'll be to the death for both. Whoa.
This is not a hate cast.
Let me jump back just for a second and talk about the structure of the con. Because this was very different from the two other big cons that we've been to, both comics related, Heroes Con and Baltimore. Both of those cons were exhibit room centric.
Yes.
That was where the action was. Big, you know, convention center. And that's where all the signings and the comics dealers and the celebrities and the publishers and everyone was there. And panel rooms, if they existed,
were
off sometimes on the second floor or off in a corner somewhere, but the panels were much smaller part of the event. Yes. I don't know which comes first, the size of the venue or that type, but when you have the big convention floor, you fill it with exhibitors and so on. But this was a hotel ballrooms. It was panel-centric. At any one time, much like a music fest, you had four or five stages. I mean, panel rooms going on at any one time, and you had to choose which of these, which you're going to go to. And one of them was a dedicated, as you said, dedicated viewing room. And they were able to keep pretty much on their schedule because you know how long the episodes are. And there were some fillers that they had of different, you know, you could throw in an interview if you needed, you know, 9 minutes before the top of the hour. You'd have some DVD extras that they threw in.
First thing that they did was a documentary about Doctor Who that was made during the during the hiatus.
Right. It was like
it was before the McGann movie.
Right.
Where there was rumors about a movie. And so everyone's being sort of cagey about it and saying, like, will he ever come back? I don't know. Maybe he could be American. So we watched a few minutes of that, which, again, was just sort of like, okay, well, the room opens at 9, so we need something to fill an hour and 17 minutes because we know that the Daleks start to finish is 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Yes, exactly.
So it needs to be exactly enough time so that then we can and try and sort of keep things pretty close to changing on the hour so that when people got out of panels, they could come watch a complete series.
Some of the ones that I went to were the History of Comics in Doctor Who magazine. Doctor Who as a period drama. We both saw about half of that, I think, right? That was interesting, talking about some of the costuming issues, then also bigger picture about writing appropriately for those sorts of eras.
Some push now to be less Eurocentric.
Right.
Which was really good.
So your dream of a reimagined Aztecs. That could happen.
Maybe.
The way a lot of the panels operated is they had, I guess, 50 or 55 minutes. And usually 35 or 40 of that was the presentations or the leader of the panel asking the questions, and then they would throw it open to the audience. And in that one, you had some good audience questions and answers about, you know, what is there a historical person you would like to see, meet the doctor, or a type of historical person or a location? And that's where they talked about some of the places they hadn't been to before.
That was a really good.
That was really.
It was really insightful. And it was a good example of the way that most of the panels are structured is that they're usually about 60% quote unquote expert.
Right.
Writers, directors, story editors, people like that, and then two or three fans.
Right.
Who are sort of knowledgeable about that particular type or have an interest in that particular type of thing. So
and a lot of those would be bloggers of certain types or podcasters or, you know, folks who had done work usually in that type of, you know, written about that specific topic.
So that you could get some really good, well, from the writer's perspective, here are things that we're working on. And from a fan perspective, here are some of the things that we are looking for. So there was some really good.
And I remember on that one, at least one of the panelists was in period costume.
Yes.
From Victorian-ish era. The cosplay was not just limited to the fans. The fans were also panelists. Panelists were fans at other cons.
We kept seeing Paul Cornell sitting everywhere in the back row of every panel
taking
ever.
Notes and enjoying and laughing, yes.
That particular presenter was very knowledgeable. And she was one of the people who was also presenting about race in Doctor Who. She's an African-American woman. And she was talking about race relations and being inclusive to non-white fans. And so she was on several panels, always in that particular period dress. And so again, that's one of those things of, I didn't meet her. I didn't know her. I don't have any idea who she was, but I saw her repeatedly and I'll be like, oh, you, which is something that Shag and the Sutherlands told us, that if you're at the con physically long enough, you will start to recognize people. It's a small, it's a small convention.
And I don't remember the number, but I think it was Shag who said, because of the spacing, it caps at a pretty low number, 3,000-4,000, I want to say. I
mean, it's at most 2,800.
Somewhere in that ballpark, which is why the tickets are so hard to get, because it is a hotel ballrooms. And so, you know, you have those legitimate physical limitations.
There's max capacity on how many people can show up legally.
Exactly.
That also had the greatest comment from a audience member, which are not always great,
right,
who stood up and said, what type of era companion did you want?
Yes.
And they mentioned Jamie McCrimmon, not a historical person necessarily, but a person from a certain era. And they mentioned in brief, for example, something like having Madame de Pompadour. And then that just started a whole spiral for you and me about why wasn't she a companion?
No, that one, the idea was, well, you know, you could take Madame de Pompadour from that time, run her around space and time for half a season or a season, drop her back the next day. People will wonder where she disappeared to, but that's about it.
You don't have to explain anything.
But you could do that with historical, either legitimate historic personas or with representative of an era.
Yeah, like characters from any particular era or place. So there was some really good stuff about various wars that people were interested in, sort of various far-flung areas. Someone said Portugal, that Doctor Who, even in Europe, that Doctor Who had never been to Portugal.
Interesting, right.
And I was like, well, there's some really good stuff there. You also went to another
comics
panel
for the Titan Comics. I like what they're doing with the license.
Reconstructing lost episodes.
That was about the folks that do the animation for the lost episodes, and they played, you know, bits of a number of them and talked about having just telesnaps or a script versus a shooting script is sometimes different. And one that they added, I'm sure, late, because there were so many comics people there, was the Remembering Stan Lee panel. That was very interesting as well, as even the younger folks certainly had stories about either being inspired by Stan or in some cases having the opportunity to meet him. Marv Wolfman was on that panel as well. And obviously he had a lot of things to say, being the person there with the most comic experience. So that was an interesting one. And I went to a pilot presentation of a TV show that we didn't know existed
until we saw the cardboard standee of Doug Jones.
One of our favorite people, actor Doug Jones. We were in the exhibit room, the dealer's room, and walking by, and you said, "Is that Doug Jones I just saw on that TV screen?"
And we went back. Yes, it was.
And he has the cardboard standee because he was part of this new TV show that they are hoping to get off the ground called Space Command.
Mm-hmm. And the creator was like a former Doctor Who writer or script editor or director or something like that he was involved in production. And so he had gotten together some Kickstarter money to make a first series of a thing that was on YouTube. And of course, we were like, well, you know, we didn't know this existed, but he was like, here, take our swag, take our card, take our this, take our that, have some pins.
We said, okay, thank you. Can we take a picture of that Doug Jones standee? He's one of our favorite people.
And they were like, absolutely. Nicely. Let me just move out of the way.
What, you guys come back here. We'll take a picture of you two. Okay.
If you insist. So that was really fun. Again, just nice people hanging out. Attendees, panelists, fans, bloggers, you know, merchants. Like, everybody was just there to have a good time.
I doubt that Space Command ever goes anywhere. That's the way of pilots and ideas and
YouTube
so forth.
YouTube miniseries, but
it was certainly fun watching it. There were a number of Babylon 5 and Star Trek and Doctor Who people involved in that show. So that was one of the fun ones.
While you were going to the reconstruction of lost episodes, I think was the same time that they were doing the new Third Doctor Adventures panel.
Right.
So it was the actor who is now playing Third Doctor in the new series of Big Finish audio dramas that they're doing, along with a couple other actors, including Katie Manning, who Shag got to see her individual.
Joe Grant.
Yes, Joe Grant got to see her individual panel, and he was like, she is the most insane woman that I have ever met. She is just having a ball. Like,
and to
she
clarify,
is just,
Shag lives in Florida. Anyway.
Yeah, she is just pleased and delighted, super energetic, a little spacey.
Perfect.
The perfect, like, everyone's slightly mad aunt. And she was delightful. So going to the panel was great. She told a lot of good stories about working with John Pertwee and then with working with the new actor whose name is escaping me. And sort of talking about how she had actually been portraying the Third Doctor in a couple of things that she'd been doing. There was some stories where she said, oh, yes, I played every single character. That she was Joe Grant. She was her other character. And the Third Doctor and the Brigadier. Like, she just played everyone. And she is a very, like, well-versed voice actor. And it's just interesting because that's such a specific skill that I'm always surprised when screen actors are also good audio actors just because they are very different. And so they talked a lot about process and also told some stories about Katie getting locked in the bathroom and
having to text the other actor.
And
to let her out.
To let her out. And she said, and he came and let me out of the toilet, and he rescued me, and that's when he became my doctor. And everybody, and it was really sweet. It was really sweet. I didn't go to very many celebrity panels general.
Yeah, we did. I didn't.
There was the one that I was interested about was that Tony Curran, a.k.a. Vincent of And the Doctor fame, was there. And so he had a panel, and about 50% of the questions, quote unquote, were just people sort of standing up and being like, I have a mental illness. And the way that you portrayed Vincent in that episode was so moving to me that it helped my parents understand what I was going through, or it helped my partner understand, or it gave me something to hold on to, that it just meant a lot. That was the first time I saw someone like me. Because in that episode, he has an episode.
Right.
And they were like, I've never seen someone have a manic depressive episode on television before. Because it's always just like, oh, you're depressed. So you're just sad in the corner. But like the lashing out, the uncontrolled emotions, they were like, that's something that happens to me. And I never saw that. And so it was just very moving. So about 50% of them were sort of like historical questions of like, well, what about this? Or did you do this? Or what was your method? That sort of thing. And the other half were just people being like, I don't have a question. I just want to say thank you. And him being very, very gracious. And I was also amused because in the panel, he was wearing like a straw hat, like the Vincent van Gogh flat straw hat. And then when I saw him walking around, just, you know, going to the restroom or whatever, he was just wandering around in the hat all day.
So he was actually cosplaying himself?
Which I just was
pleased. Only at a Doctor Who con!
Pleased and delighted. I'm like, honestly, that was probably the best thing he could do to be vaguely incognito.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Because if he was wandering around without the hat, people would be like, wait a minute, did he? Wait. That's just another thing about Doctor Who being really chill, is the celebrities were just hanging out.
Yeah.
So Barrowman and Tate and Colin Baker, of course, all had their actual panels.
Right.
But they also then had, they had just their signings
and their photo opportunities. And,
you know, they had their specific photo ops.
Right.
But, like, I saw Catherine Tate just hanging out at the table during the non-photo op time, just talking to people. And it was sort of like, well, if you actually want a signature, if you actually want this, you have to
get
come
in
like
this line at this specific time.
You know, come
and
during business hours. But otherwise, she was just sitting there eating a sandwich, hanging out, talking to people. We didn't see much of the actual opening ceremonies, but Colin Baker was there with the Radio Free Scarrow people. And his opener was fantastic because he got in and they're like, oh, so, you know, and of course, the Sixth Doctor himself, Colin Baker. Yay, Colin. Oh, it's so great to have you here. How are you doing today? You know, how are you feeling, Colin? He goes, oh, I'm great. Have you seen me in the new season? I look fantastic. Like, amazing. He's like, I'm gorgeous. So that was fun. He just seems like just the nicest guy and who's really sort of taken his Doctor Who time and sort of managed to thread that very thin needle of embracing it without being completely eclipsed by it.
Right.
The five-ish doctors just like, you know, completely willing to take pot shots and make jokes. You know, he's not bitter. And he's just sort of managed to roll with it. And so he was having the time of his life, obviously. The academic symposium is actually where we spent most of our time, surprising no one.
Yes, that first day there was about a four-hour block of time for the Time Lord Timelines, the academic symposium. And this was mostly professors and researchers and folks who are in that professionally or semi-professionally presenting 10 or 15 minute, 20 minute papers on particular topics, some related to the technical aspects. There's one about sound.
Was
really good, tracing the sound throughout Doctor Who's history. A number of ones related to diversity and SJW type of issues. They had them broken down where you might have three papers on a particular topic. Each person would present, and then the host would have the three presenters together and ask some questions, because again, they were sort of themed presentations, and then open it up to the audience as well to ask some questions about the topics. And I really like that. It really did have the feel of an academic conference for that, but, you know, shorter papers, shorter presentations, drilling down on specific particular areas. So that, I think, that was a very unique thing. I hadn't run into that format, that concept on any other cons. I do know that Dragon Con does have an academic track.
Right.
So,
and that's
give them a shout out as well.
And I thought it would be more like the Dragon Con setup, where it was like, okay, it's 4 hours, so you'll have four presenters.
Right.
But I actually really appreciated the kind of scattershot way that they went about it, because again, since it was so small, if you wanted to go talk to these people afterwards, they'd just be hanging out in the bar, and you could just go up and be like, hey, so I heard your talk about asexuality and aromanticism in Doctor Who.
That one, by the way, was really good.
I'm so mad I missed it.
That one was really good.
Well, if it makes... It doesn't make me feel better. But the only thing that hurts more than me having to miss that is that it was actually... The reason I missed it was because the LGBTQ, etc. meetup was at the exact same time, which meant the presenter could not go to the meetup that they helped set up. So that sucked a little bit just on the scheduling side of things. I'm so sad I missed it because I really wanted to go to that panel. That was the one that had the sort of the keynote speech was talking about intersectionality and women of color within the Doctor Who fandom specifically. Like also within the show a little bit, but mostly about making spaces for women of color in fandom. That was a really good discussion, because it started off with, we have a really welcoming, open, good, kind fan base,
and we need to be intentional about this mm-hmm. one particular thing
right.
because we can't let that slip.
Right.
Because including that is an important part of mm-hmm. being an open and kind and thoughtful fandom. So that was really, really, really good.
Yeah, that was the opening address. Then they had a series of panels on fandom in general, different aspects of fandom. They had one on sort of the more literary aspects, narrative topics, genre aspects, and then one about how memory and history and culture is presented in Doctor Who. And that one had a law professor talk about the laws of Rassilon as you could attempt to reverse engineer based on the episodes that take place on Gallifrey, where you're talking about Article 32 of the Convention says this, and Article 9 of the Constitution. So trying to recreate a legal system based on the bits of pieces. So what the priorities are, how the government, quote-unquote, operates based on the canon of the show.
And in that same section of talking about some of those sorts of, like the sort of philosophical mm-hmm. topics, that there was the laws of Rassilon, there was also a presenter who talked about the ethics of time travel.
Yes.
Which was excellent. And again, 11 and a half minutes. The presenter clearly was a big fan of The Good Place and had, for every scene transition, was a character from The Good Place. And one of the best ones is, I think his name is Chidi? Chidi? Talking about ethics, just like writes ethics really big. And he's like, we're going to talk about ethics. Really good. Really good. And then talked for like a minute at the very end to sort of put mm-hmm. a capper on it. Said there's all these ethical theories that all of the other doctors have ascribed to at various different times, different theories. But Jodie Whittaker's doctor does not appear to follow any of these. So what is her ethics? And was talking about there's a feminist ethics movement in virtue ethics about the people who are immediately around you that is rooted mm-hmm. in like compassion. And he was like,
Team TARDIS.
And so he talked about
the fam.
Team TARDIS. Yeah. And so he talked about Team TARDIS and about those ethics of sort of ethics of interpersonal relation and sort of brought it all back to the keynote speaker, mm-hmm. which is a thing that I appreciate in a structure like this, brought it all the way back and said, because what we need to take from the show is not necessarily actually the questions of is time travel ethical, because that doesn't apply to us. What we need to take is those message and ethics and morals and apply them to things that do exist mm-hmm. in reality.
Right.
Things like our interpersonal relations and be intentional about caring and compassion. And mm-hmm. provided that we always care about others and think about others, then the questions of ethics will follow. Like, it was great. It was great.
Once we were in and were thinking about the things that we wanted to get to, there were two. One was that academic symposium. And then one was one of the few non-Doctor Who related things. So
that's the thing about having an LA convention, is sometimes people who are not actually directly related to the thing, who just live in LA, can just show up and set up a booth or
get a panel going or something. So this one was the 25th anniversary of Babylon 5.
So they were able to have several of the actors, Lita, Delenn, Ivanova, were sort of like the headliners.
Yeah. Those were the first guests that they were booked, and we were excited for that.
Yeah, we were set. And then Walter Koenig
played Bester,
and a.k.a. Chekhov. He was there, and then they got the big name, the big guns, Bruce Boxleitner, Captain Sheridan. That was great.
I'm so
glad that the two of them were able to come, because the way it basically shook out is that there was the presenter, and then there were all of the ladies.
Right.
And then there were the old men on the couch next to them. And
to be fair,
Boxleitner and Koenig just sort of sniping back and forth at each other, talking about how old they are, which was delightful.
Having Boxleitner and Koenig off on their own was probably the safest for the three women, just based on how that was going.
You know, it really does move me to know that Bruce Boxleitner, when he was on the TV show Chuck, was not actually acting. He just is a 65-year-old frat boy, but like in the best sort of way. That was delightful. They had some good questions that he had sort of mm-hmm. planned out. There were a couple good audience questions. There mm-hmm. were some really good questions that were that were directed towards Claudia Christian.
Ivanova.
Mm-hmm. About, well, to her and to Mira Furlan, who played Delenn. When Mira Furlan introduced herself, she said, "I am from a country that no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
I am from Yugoslavia. So when I came to America, I was a refugee. I was not called this, but that is what I was. And I needed a job. And I went in. And the casting director liked my accent. And so he cast me in Babylon 5 on my first interview in Los Angeles." And it's like, okay, well, there you go. A fan came up and said, "I am actually also born in a country that no longer exists, from the former USSR. And she said, "And for me, watching Babylon 5 and A, hearing a Russian accent from a character, which we'd never been able to quite place, like, what is Delenn's accent? Oh, it's just Mira Furlan's accent. That's what she sounds like. That's what a Yugoslavian accent sounds like." And then having a character who was canonically on the show was Russian.
And it's interesting because he had Chekhov there as well. And his story took place during the Cold War. And Babylon 5 was filmed after
right
the Cold
War.
So they were both able to talk about playing Russians
in space. Was actually
very interesting.
And like the way that Russians in space was actually really meaningful for Russians and Russian Americans in the present. Like, that was really interesting. And then Claudia Christian talked about also playing a Jewish character and about how that representation was really important. And that was just, it was a really good discussion. And it took a little bit of a downer in the middle, which was actually really
because so many of the cast have passed away.
And it was actually, really sort of like meaningful. There was just this sort of quiet lull in the middle where they sort of.
So Box Leitner was talking about, it was great working with these people. We're glad, you know, to be on the stage with them, but also
those who
Jerry
passed.
Doyle's not here, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and Andreas Kasultis. And
all these people who aren't, it's a shockingly long list for a show that's not that old.
Yeah, and so they sort of had this really quiet moment, and actually kind of, it meant a lot to me also, because that morning, you and I and Shag and the Sutherlands had sort of had the same discussion, that we were all having this moment, this confab, this breakfast together, like, man, it's so great that we get together and we get to see each other because Sean Engel's not here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why we're out here doing this, is because some of our friends have also passed away.
As we said in that prior episode, we didn't want that to happen.
Exactly.
So we've gotten out to events like this. So that, like you said, that was a nice sad moment.
Yeah, sort of for everyone. And they got to have that moment where they, you know, because, you know, why are we showing up at a Doctor Who convention? And the actress who played Leto was like, well, I'm a big Whovian. So, like, again, sort of like Paul Cornell, she was going to be there either
no matter
way,
what,
but she might as well be there and, you know, set up an autograph table. But they were like, you know, it's good to be here and we know that the fans care about it, but also it's the 25th anniversary. That's a big celebratory thing. But also, we'll just take any excuse to hang out.
Yes.
Like, you got to take those moments when you have them. And as I said, like, they had, you know, autographs set up. I was this close, you guys. I had $51 in my pocket, and an audio signature from Claudia Christian was $50. And it was close. It was so, so close. If I could have gotten
Michelle Fife came this close to being bumped off the start of this episode. If it had been $25.
If it had been $40 for the audio and a picture or something, like, or like $50 for like two audio and a physical, like something. Oh,
just out of
so
your price range.
I did run into her in the bathroom, which was hysterical because right across the hallway you were running into Vincent in the bathroom. So, like,
exactly.
We each had our brush with fame.
Yes, exactly.
We just didn't get any evidence because I had to spend that $50 on a dice tower.
Let's jump to merch. I will transition by saying I did buy a handful of Babylon 5 books,
which you were partially able to distribute at the convention.
Right.
It's the circle of life. I know a lot of people, Shag, bring a pretty large amount of money to spend on merch at the con. I'm not really that interested in display merch. That's not really my thing.
Right.
I'm more interested in sort of like, we've talked about this before with music, like we're more patrons than mm-hmm. we are like fans when it comes mm-hmm. to buying stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not like, I like this thing, so I want to buy the thing. It's more, I like this person, so I want to give the person my money.
Right, yes.
You know, it sort of goes around the back way. So I was looking at the stuff and there were patches, which, oh man, I wanted there to be a Library Defense Force Kanto Edition patch. I didn't care how much it was going to be. I was going to buy it, but I showed a picture to the patch dude and he was like, I have literally never seen this. And I'm like, I know, they only sell it on Hong Kong eBay for like $45. Like nobody has it.
The time I went to the one of the big pop culture tables where they had the buttons and patches, probably the same one you're talking about. And I was wearing the t-shirt of my favorite doctor.
Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom. And I said, do you have anything with this guy? No.
No. Even if they do, it is in a box in a warehouse that they'll bring out for Comic-Con.
Exactly.
They're not going to bring it to
no
WhoCon.
Dr. Doom Dang. Swag.
That was my one thing that I was like, if I can find that patch, I'm going to get it. And I couldn't find it. And the dude was like, it doesn't exist. I'm like, well, okay, fine. Well, now I've got this money and I don't know. I guess I'll buy some sort of kitschy something for my roommate, I guess. And then I went around the corner and there was a person there who was selling handmade dice towers. Mm. And the only Who fan who probably cares about this is Nathaniel Wayne, who's like, yeah, of course you need a D&D dice rolling table. Like, obviously.
And you've just, and you are in the process of reassembling a game night, if I remembering correctly.
Exactly.
Trying
so
your
I'm
best
sort of,
to.
I was like, oh, it's okay. So it's all sort of coming together. So there were some, of course, you know, the seller had brought some Doctor Who themed ones with mm-hmm. TARDISes and sonic screwdrivers and whatever, but they also had one that just had, you know, an axe and a bow and a sword and a d20 and said, like, choose your weapon. I was like, oh man, I love that. I was able to wheedle it down to like $60. And I was like, okay, you know what? That's fine. And then, of course, right afterwards, I was like, no, Claudia Christian, no! But it's a really cool tower, and I'm glad I got it. But it's like, okay, of course, only I could go to a Doctor Who convention, buy zero Doctor Who things, spend no money on autographs or audio signatures or, you know, meetups or anything like that, and leave with D&D swag, of course.
And we were most excited about a Babylon 5 panel. You know, but still, we still love Doctor Who, and we glad we went to the convention, and they were awesome.
I loved seeing all the cosplayers.
One of the things I liked, they were organized sort of themes and meetups every day. So I remember one day I was in line at the food truck for lunch, and there was 27 Donna Nobles getting their picture taken all together. And certain one day was 12th Doctor Day. Obviously. And so you had those themed meetups where on that day, you know, you had group photos of the doctors. And so you had, I remember one day it was Tennants, first just the Tens, and then the Tens and the Roses.
Yep.
Together. Some of whom were together.
Yes.
Some of whom were not, but.
A thing that I really love about Doctor Who cosplay is that because they're just clothes, there is a certain indication of, like, you look a certain way, so you should cosplay so-and-so, which is great, because there is not exactly a lack of short, middle-aged, somewhat rotund people with curly graying hair who could just dress like Sylvester McCoy. There is a not insignificant number of tall, weedy, hipster-looking dudes with good brown hair who put some brainy specs and a blue suit on them.
I ran into a great Capaldi.
Yeah.
With the sonic sunglasses.
He I think I saw good. The same. Was he wandering around good. With yes. his guitar? Yeah. So that was great. There were several Runaway Brides.
Yes. Which was obviously one day, I think Saturday was Runaway Bride Day for sure. Probably a dozen there. And both days that we were there, and even the registration day, the first day, there were a lot of 13s.
Yeah.
In other words, lots of people in your coat.
Yep. That's the thing, because as long as you have the coat and are wearing, you know, sort of loose, flowy, you know, masculine-ish clothes underneath it, it's like, you're wearing some big boots and a loose t-shirt and the 13 coat. You are cosplaying 13. Have a ribbon. So that was really fun. I got to meet a lot of cool people just because I was wearing the coat.
And again, in the sort of the spirit of this fandom, there was no nitpicking
exactly.
about the cosplays. No, actually, the glasses, he only wore that with this outfit and this tie, so that is a bad cosplay. No, mm-hmm. none of that.
Yeah.
And again, you were just wearing the coat. There were people with the coat and the shirt
and
or the suspenders.
And the boots and the little, like, waiter pants.
You
and
were
everything.
Just wearing
I
the
was
coat.
Just in the coat.
But you were accepted.
Exactly. Basically, the three big groups, like the three big types of cosplay, there was the hyper intricate, very
yes.
specific. There were people who were very specific.
Yes.
You know, sixth doctor from this specific mm-hmm. episode with these specific props doing these specific things. There were the complete casual fans who were like, oh, I'm a redhead, so I'll put on a mini skirt and tights and a sweater and a scarf. And congratulations, I'm Amy Pond. Mm-hmm. And then there was personally my favorite type of cosplay, which is the transformative cosplay. Mm-hmm. So there was Dalek Power Ranger mashups or
a lot of Victorian era blank.
Exactly.
Or like, cross-playing, so gender swapped of
yeah,
various
there's some,
things.
There's some gender swap. There was some time swap. There were two really good first doctors.
Mm.
One of them, an older gentleman. Excellent. Perfect. There's so much diversity in the main character
yes.
that you can always find someone who kind of looks like you.
The one guy with sort of the scruffy gray beard, older gentleman. I'm putting reindeer antlers on, and I'm Wilf.
Exactly. God, he was my favorite cosplayer.
He was pretty good, actually.
He was really good, actually. But the first doctor, there was one, you know, slight older gentleman, and another one was a slight older lady.
Mm.
Who had like a full black dress, but had the little pointed cap, very austere mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. the little tiny tie.
One I wanted to mention was the Matt Smith, who had
the bow-legged stance.
And the sonic screwdriver, and was doing the stances, and he would walk around manipulating his sonic screwdriver in a weird way, and then looking at it, reading it, nodding, moving on. He was on most of the time. Not interacting with people, like no eye contact, no
yeah,
knowing,
no
nothing.
No going up to anyone, no any, but just like
he was
being,
just being
which is great.
Matt Smith. He was full 11, but you could be any shape, size, race, color, anything and put a fez on, and you're in.
Yep.
You're an accepted cosplayer.
Exactly, and that was what I really loved. There was a lot of, I mentioned the fancy, posh ladies' dress,
mm-hmm,
fifth doctor
yes.
outfit, which was largely heavier women, which I was like, mm-hmm. that's cool. And a lot of them non-white. I don't know why this is a specific thing, but this is like a specific thing that I saw four or five
mm-hmm.
like non-white women who were all wearing a version, like their
mm-hmm.
own, they'd clearly all made their own version of the fifth doctor with the
mm-hmm.
big fancy hat. And it was like, it was super cool.
Cosplay came up at that panel about period drama.
Yeah.
Doctor Who has historical drama, period piece. And
because there's a really big period drama Doctor Who, like, overlap.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is, again, it seems obvious. But then again, I also assumed there would be a much larger pen and paper role play Doctor Who
Oops.
Overlap than there actually was.
But one or two of the panelists was talking about that they're bummed out anytime Who goes back in time and they don't dress for it.
Yeah, because that's an opportunity.
We could have been Bill Potts at this wearing that.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could have been Rose doing this.
Or, yeah, or you can be an Amy Pond who's dressed in this outfit, but
often they're just either the doctor and or the companion just wearing their outfit. It's like, and I hadn't really thought about that, but again, from the cosplaying, from that wing of fandom, that's like, ah, shoot.
Missed opportunity.
We missed the chance.
But they just make up for it. They're like,
true.
You know what? You won't put Amy Pond in an Elizabethan full outfit, and I will.
Exactly.
So.
What are you cosplaying as? The cutscene. The scene that should have been written,
where Amy
but wasn't.
Was actually in proper Venetian dress in Venice,
exactly.
for example. I also wanted to put a point here because there was, like I said, there was lots of like reinterpretations and reimaginings
mm-hmm.
and redesigns and a lot of this character, but as this other character sort of things. And my favorite mashup cosplay was I managed to somehow find one Adventure Zone cosplayer when they were a TARDIS, but spelled T-A-A-R-D-I-S, as in the wizard. That was really fun. And I scoped them from the other side when I was in line for a food truck.
Were you wearing your Adventure Zone t-shirt that day?
I was not, unfortunately. Okay. I was so close. But I saw them way off in the distance, and I was like, huh, that's a somewhat feminine-presenting androgynous person wearing a big fancy cape with a giant blue wizard hat, but it says TARDIS police call box. And I ran over and I'm like, are you Taco the wizard? And they were like, you're yes! the fifth person today to get that. I was like, yes, victory.
Now, we said we didn't do any of the paid photo opportunities or paid signatures and autographs.
They started doing a thing the last couple of years, Shag mm-hmm. said, which was like the
meet and greet
the meet
sort
and
of
greet chats where it was like two or three celebrities, and it was like it was a lot. It was more than whatever the signing was, but $80
or something, depending on the group, it ranged.
So you could like go and hang out with the three of them, and they would just be like having coffee and ask questions, but mostly just sort of like be there. Mm-hmm. And that was like, that's an interesting concept. I like it ideally, but it wasn't really for us. Mm-hmm. We did do some signings, but we didn't pay for any of the autograph sessions or the meet and greets or the photos or the anything like that. Ticketed high.
The closest we got was a standee of Doug Jones, right?
That exactly.
was the closest was, we got to us to a
That was our
meeting
celebrity
photo
was with Doug Jones cardboard cutout.
We did get some of the comic book stuff signed.
We've mentioned Paul Cornell many times. I made sure to bring the first four issues of Demon Knights.
Yes, and that gave him a chance to talk about something other than Doctor Who, which is fine.
I mean, he loves Doctor Who.
I had Doctor Who stuff signed by him, so that worked out.
That worked out.
Rachel Stott, Richard Dinnick, Christopher Jones, some of the writers and artists on the Doctor Who comic. So I was able to get that stuff signed. But thing about Paul Cornell,
mm-hmm.
he is the guy who would be at the con no matter what.
And didn't he actually tell you that? Like, don't tell the bookers that they don't have to pay me to come here. I was getting ready to pre-order my ticket.
What do you mean, tell me that? You mean when I had dinner with Paul Cornell?
Oh my gosh.
Famous Doctor Who and TV and comic book writer? Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
When you were out out with your friend?
That you were hanging out with your best friend, Paul Cornell?
Boom. See, it worked out because we were at the food truck area. This was me, Shag, and the Count and Countess. And we had gotten our dinner, and we were at a table, was one of the tables that you stand up at.
Yeah, no chairs.
Because there weren't, and most of the other tables were taken. There weren't a ton of tables outside anyway. And we saw Paul Cornell in line and talked about, such a nice guy. We see him on all the panels, blah, blah, blah. And then about 10 minutes later, we saw him with a drink in one hand and a gyro or burgers, trying to figure out how he was going to eat these things standing there. And
considering he had a panel in like 15
so
minutes.
We called him over, Paul, come over here and have a table. So he had a table. He ate. And of course, we plied him with many questions.
Yeah, of course he did.
But super nice guy. Actually, I think Shag was going to his panel next, mm-hmm. at least so. So that was fun. But really nice guy. Again, guy that loves Doctor Who. He's the one that said, don't tell him, but I'd be here anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one of the, there was certainly not the only one where he would be hosting a panel and then you'd go to the next thing and he'd be at the panel in the back room and then he'd have to duck out 10 minutes early because he was going to go host another panel coming mm-hmm. up.
Or he had a signing or he had a whatever.
Mm-hmm. Did I mention I did dinner with Paul Cornell?
Maybe once, twice.
Listeners, get used to hearing sentences that start with that clause. I'm just saying.
Approximately once a day for the last 3 weeks. What? I mean, it's shocking how often you having dinner with Paul Cornell comes up in casual conversation.
Interesting.
Weird.
One of the nice things about it being a pretty very small, contained con is, like you said, you do see everybody who's there. So that was fun. And I think overall, I think for our first Doctor Who con, mission accomplished.
Mission super accomplished. We went to some really good panels. Some of them took some pretty mm-hmm. serious took some pretty serious turns and twists. I went with Shag to the Me Who panel because he had been there the previous year when there was a women, like, creators in Doctor Who panel, that they were having a conversation sort of about the industry, and someone sort of in passing mentioned some, like, sexual abuse and misconduct. And after one person sort of mentioned that, then another person said, and another, and another, and another, and that whole panel just sort of turned into, like, just a big opening up of everyone. And it wasn't,
you know, it wasn't planned. It wasn't supposed to be the Me Too.
And yeah, and it wasn't framed. Nobody was, like, pressured or expected, but it was just sort of like as one or two or three of the panelists sort of started opening up, that more and more
and
more
that panel from
started...
2018 has become legend.
Yeah.
It's really a big Me Too movement within Doctor Who and comics and the sci-fi fandom area. They did a revisit. They did a revisit this year.
Crazy powerful. And so they did an official, like, structured Me Who panel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of as part of a two-parter that afterwards then was kind of the panel that they planned to have previous year about women in the industry, but now framed differently with, mm-hmm. you know, Jodie Whittaker being the Doctor. And now that her series had been out, sort of talking about, mm-hmm. about that and how that's changed things on the production side and within fandom. But sort of to bridge the gap between those two panels, they took an hour to talk about people within fandom and some other people who were still in the industry sort of talking about things and having a reflection. So doing sort of a, after last year, after some of these stories were being spoken about openly, what has changed internally on the business side? What things have changed on the fandom side? What have people been doing and stuff like that? And sort of talking about, like, action items of not just...
Mm-hmm.
We're all here and we're sad and we're angry, but sort of being like, okay, well, what do we do? How do we go mm-hmm. forward from that? And so that was crazy powerful. And Shag won't tell anyone this, maybe, but he cried. So did I. It was a really powerful panel. And of course, for me, it ended up being the last thing I did.
Mm-hmm.
So right after that, it's all about, like, these big open emotions and, like, baring your soul to people. Like, you know, I saw Shag and we hugged and he was like, it's been too long. It's been 3 years since I was in Ohio. We need to do this more. And I was like, absolutely. And I hugged everyone and said goodbye to everyone. And it was a really good convention. Like, mm-hmm. the convention itself was good and the people were great.
And we, on that second day, close to lunch, we got a notification that our flight the next day had been canceled. Darn you, weather in Chicago. But we were able to get rescheduled and get back at decent hours, not miss any additional work. So we were able to, but it was that moment of panic.
We were really scared for a second there, but it gave us a couple extra hours on that final day.
Yes.
So you got to have dinner one last time mm-hmm. with all of our people while I was out having dinner with my bud.
I think Paul Cornell may have been at that. I don't remember, but anyway.
I'm real glad you didn't miss getting to have dinner with Paul Cornell.
See, it worked out perfect.
I'm glad that the Chicago airport was closed down at 7:45
So I didn't have to go to bed that early.
Really good time.
The logistics of it, the people really worked out well. And do you want to give the giveaway? I mean, you've sort of hinted at it, but do you want to give away the Shag secret?
Oh, yeah. He's a really nice guy. He will deny it to his dying day. He's a really great guy.
And the Sutherlands. Well, they're even greater. But well, still, I mean, on the Pantheon.
That's a question
Shag
of no
falls
context.
Short, but still.
I mean... He is, I'm sure, honored to be mentioned in the same sentence.
Yeah, exactly. He should be. Yeah, exactly.
That was a great time.
All the people we met there.
Everyone was great.
Really terrific. Really terrific.
The people we met for the first time, mm-hmm. like Brian and Courtney.
Yep.
People we just sort of saw in passing mm-hmm. and our buddies from all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Good time. And Paul Cornell. You know, no big deal.
I had dinner with him. I don't know if I mentioned that. So if you have anything to share with us, comments about this episode, or, and we really mean this, any of our prior episodes, send us any sort of feedback that you have. You can send that to relativelygeeky@gmail.com or relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can leave a message there.
We also have a Facebook page that you can join and leave comments there, and that'll have some... some fun updates, and maybe a picture of us standing with Doug Jones. Who knows?
You can find the network on Twitter at relatively_geek.
Oh, that's right. We have one of those now. I literally always forget because I don't use Twitter. You know, going to a Doctor Who convention when you don't use Twitter
is terrible.
Literally everyone is like, here's a ribbon and my Twitter handle. I'm like, great. I only need one of these.
Here's my business card for the podcast.
Business card. We did give out a couple of those.
Mostly to Brian's cousin.
Well, yeah.
Courtney, who said that at some point, you know, I don't know if she asked how we all knew each other.
But she said that she'd been listening to, oh, yeah, because I listen to podcasts, and in unison, everyone reaches for their wallets.
Of course, Shag pulls out his one business card for the Fire and Water podcast. We pull out our two business cards.
Ruth and Darren pull out like seven. I don't even. That was.
So
that's what happens. But it's okay, because when it comes to Doctor Who, and I mean, honestly, podcasting too, the rule always applies. We are not experts.
We're just family.
Allons-y.
Geronimo!